seconds. They're down by one. Gordon got it. Aaron Gordon with a deep shot. Williams three-quarter court. No good. The Nuggets steal game one. That's a winner for Aaron Gordon. 121 to 119.
That was ridiculous last night. What a finish to the late game in Oklahoma City. An exciting night for the NBA. Ian Eagles, so good, by the way. Two thrilling finishes, Boston, New York, followed by Denver and OKC. The road team has won the first three of the second round series. Game one in the fourth second round series is tonight between Golden State and Minnesota in the Twin Cities. Yeah, a thrilling night for the NBA playoffs. Also, a not so great night for the NBA. I'll get to all of that coming up here in a few minutes. Caps, Canes tonight kick off their second round series a week after Carolina's last playoff game and 6 days after Washington's last game. Seems excessive that we had to wait this long for game one, but we will get to it tonight at Capital One Arena with game one. The voice of Caps Radio, John Walton, will join us today at 12:30. Before that, in roughly 30 minutes, you'll hear my conversation over the weekend with Tarik El-Bashir. So two hockey guests on the show. And then tomorrow, after game one tonight, Emily Kaplan from ESPN, who is flat out one of the best on ice, you know, in game for any sport interviewers there is out there. She's going to join us on the show early tomorrow after she's a part of the Sean McDonough first crew for ESPN tonight in D.C. for game one. Is she as good as Smokin' Al Kokin? No, nobody is. But she's as good as there is on any national broadcast. The draft is coming to D.C. in 2027. I had an inkling that this was a possibility last week when we had Joe Maloney on the show. Joe hinted to that happening. Joe used to work for the team. The league, by the way, expecting 1 million people to attend over a three-day period. That should be a really good thing economically for this city. But you know what? That's two drafts away. The draft just completed, which I said I would not grade. I decided to grade anyway to settle a bet. I'll get to that sometime on the show today as well. Took the day off yesterday, not intended. Man, golf is a rough sport. Lower back injury, nerve pain is the worst pain. I've learned two things over the years that I will share for those of you that have, you know, nerve pain related to lower back or any other part of your area. Ice over heat, always. And the Aleve Advil thing just doesn't cut it when you have legitimate pain. You need a prescribed hyper jumbo anti-inflammatory. I'm better today. Max, who was here yesterday, who did the show for me yesterday? I couldn't even pay attention.
I forget his name. Lionel?
Oh, was it Lionel?
Something like that, I think.
I'm glad to have Linnell fill in for me whenever I'm out. Linnell's talented, very talented. This from John in Ardmore, PA. That's Mainline, Philadelphia. Love Mainline, Philadelphia. Beautiful town Ardmore is. There are a lot of beautiful towns on the Mainline. Kevin, I'm a Skins fan lifelong. Listen to you on the app every day and also listen to your podcast. Is the team getting too much attention these days for things that have nothing to do with football? I feel like a new stadium, the draft news, all cover up what was a questionable offseason. I'm glad the attention is positive rather than what we had for 20 years, but it seems they've taken their eye off the ball a little bit. Thank you for that, Mainline John. Interesting take. I've heard a couple of other people say things similarly. Look, I think I said last week with the stadium news, I'm excited, but that's 5 years down the road, man. I mean, we got five seasons left at Northwest Stadium in Landover with the most exciting play on the field situation we have had in decades. You know, I said last week, wouldn't it be ironic at the end of the run of the stadium in Landover if the recent memories are the best ever? You know, a couple of championship games, maybe 5, 6, 7 playoff games. Maybe I'm getting carried away. It's possible, more possible than it's ever been. And that there are the best of times and the best of memorable games and moments actually still ahead in the final 5 years of this crappy stadium, which was crappy for many reasons. But one of those reasons is that the team was an embarrassment over its time there. Well, it won't be over its final 5 seasons. It certainly wasn't last year. But Mainline John, I would say this to you. First of all, Dan Quinn and Adam Peters and the football side of the building is not involved. They're not involved in the stadium talks. They're not involved in bringing the draft to D.C. They are focused on the things that matter right now, you know, on the product, on the field, football. You know, if you're worried about the karma of kind of being what Washington has become here recently, the Washington Commanders, painful to say that, have become recently, which is the toast of the NFL these days. You know, if you're worried about the karma associated with that when they haven't really won anything of note yet, they had a great season last year. There are plenty of teams, you know, that have had seasons like Washington did last year and don't follow it up or can't follow it up because the competition in their conference or in their division is stiff and even better than what they are. But remember, we had a very low bar to clear. And I think for the rest of the league, there was this bar that was essentially the curb that if Washington cleared it as an organization, it would start to get some of that attention, you know, that it didn't get for so many years. And I've said this many times in the past, but there's not, I wouldn't call it apples to apples in terms of the comparison, but for many years after the 60s Lombardi's, you know, iconic, legendary, dynastic teams, the Packers weren't very good. They went 20 plus years of not being a really good team. You know, and we're talking really post Lombardi. Now, they went to the playoffs here and there. They went to the playoffs in 72, played Washington in George Allen's playoff Super Bowl run at RFK Stadium on Christmas Eve 1972. And then they had a couple of other playoff appearances, but they weren't a good franchise. They had fallen into disrepair. And then Brett Favre came to the Packers. And Mike Holmgren became their coach, and they became, you know, a contender, and they ended up going to a Super Bowl and winning a Super Bowl, going to another one, losing it. And then, you know, that dovetailed into the Aaron Rodgers era, et cetera. And I remember at the time in the 90s when the Packers became real contenders again, there was a real excitement around the league because the Packers had been a storied franchise. Look, I'm not suggesting that there are a lot of young people necessarily that feel this way, but there are a lot of people around the league that are 40 or older, 45 years of age or older, that are actually kind of happy. I'm not talking about Skins fans. I'm talking about NFL fans, that Washington is relevant because of their on-field product again. You know, there's this saying about, you know, various sports, boy, this sport is better when these teams are good. You know, I'm not saying Washington's Dallas or Washington's Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh's really never fallen off and never had the kind of period that Washington's gone through. But Washington is, you know, on that second group of teams where the league's better when they're good and they're contending. But back to your, you know, note, Mainline John. I think that part of what you're suffering from is you are still, you know, suffering from Snyder syndrome, you know, the syndrome in where, you know, where you essentially the default is you're conditioned to expect the worst at all times. Any shred of positive was treated skeptically, certainly for 10, 12 years, and it deserved the skepticism. They earned it. But he's gone, and we've been cured of that. You know, you got to move on from that. Get over it. It doesn't mean, because we don't have, you know, Snyder syndrome anymore, it doesn't mean that everything will be good and everything will be successful in the future. It just means that we can believe legitimately that good things and success are in store. We don't have to suspend reality to have a conversation about the team. You know, for all of those years, we talked about it all the time. We've got to have, you know, a suspension of reality to talk about the draft, to talk about the game coming up this week, to talk about why, you know, they lost and didn't go for the 4th-and-3 that they should have gone for. We had to suspend the reality that as long as the team was owned by Dan Snyder, there wasn't going to be legitimate chance for success. We don't have to do that anymore. You know, we don't have to do that. Dan Quinn and Adam Peters in the football operation is a football operation. They're not, you know, operating at the whims of somebody's marketing ideas. You know, they're not, you know, being brought into meetings to talk about how great their football team is to try to sell suites. You know, but, you know, there's also one part of John's email to me that does ring a little bit true in that, look, they've got a stadium deal. You know, there's still the city council that needs to clear it. There is the draft coming in 2027. And we understand that none of these things happen as long as Dan Snyder had continued to own the team. That's a lock. None of these things would have happened. But would they have happened had Jaden Daniels not been available at number 2 for Washington in the 2024 draft? The ownership is completely different. It's competent. It's also, you know, filled with, at this point, you know, upon further review, and I don't think we have to have that review anytime soon, much better people who treat people much differently than the last organization. The last organization wasn't just incompetent. They were bad people throughout the organization. That's what kind of he looked for. He looked for dumb and mean. You know, a terrible combination in business. And arrogant. Arrogant being the worst part of that in so many ways. Because the combination of arrogant and dumb is the worst kind of combination in a person or in a business. And we had to bear witness to it for 20-something years. That's not what this organization is. Which is why we don't have to suspend reality. But what's also true is Josh Harris is fine. Mitch Rale's fine. Magic Johnson fine. Dan, you know, Adam Peters and Dan Quinn, they've done a really nice job. But if they didn't have number 2 overall, if Greg Zuerlein misses the kick on Christmas Eve 2023 and Washington doesn't get a chance to draft Jaden Daniels or any of the top quarterbacks in one of, right now, what appears to be one of the better quarterback drafts in recent memory, well, I don't know if the stadium deal is moving forward. I don't know if the draft is here in 2027. That's a possibility too. What changed everything? Everything. Things were already changed for the better. But what really ramped it up and made Washington the toast of all NFL conversations these days, and they are a part of a lot of conversations these days. They are. And wait until a week from tomorrow when the NFL schedule comes out and you see our team plastered across multiple 4, 5, 6 maybe primetime opportunities. You know, 6, 7, 8 standalone opportunities. Maybe an international game. Maybe a Thanksgiving or Christmas game. Maybe both. And we had Mike North, the guy who is involved in making the schedule on the show a couple of weeks back. I'll play some of that for those of you that missed it as we get closer to the schedule and closer to my mock schedule towards the end of this week or maybe Monday. I like to get it out before some of the leaks or some of the actual official news about the schedule comes out, because I don't want to, you know, be able to do my schedule already knowing one of the games. But bottom line is, man, you know, it's a better organization. We don't have to deal with what we dealt with for all of those years, knowing that we have competence, we have humility, we have good in the organization. None of that guarantees consistent, sustained success on the field, but it certainly doesn't eliminate it from it being a possibility, which is what we had for all that time. But the fact that some of the, you know, good fortune has gone their way, and it started last year, you know, on a late April, you know, Thursday night, having the number two pick in the draft and having Jaden Daniels be available to them, that is imperative. You know, I love the trenches too. I love good offensive line play. I love good defensive line play. Bottom line is, if you don't have the quarterback, you can't be a sustained, successful contending team. You can have a 10-7 season. You might even win a playoff game or two, you know, but you're not going to be sustained year over year over year. You know, if you want to look at Jalen Hurts and say he's not a good quarterback, you're nuts. He is a good quarterback. All right, he's not Patrick Mahomes, but look at what the Chiefs did last year with a terrible offensive line. Terrible offensive line. And they still made it back to the Super Bowl. And that's where Washington is now. I'm not saying he's Mahomes. Not yet, anyway. I am saying that as long as he's upright and healthy, it's going to be hard for this team not to be a contending team. And to sort of deserve right now being, you know, the center of a lot of NFL conversations. You know, that one move, that one pick, that one night, that's what really got us to where we are today. But we still would have been in a much better place had they drafted Drake May or Michael Penix Jr. All right. I did want to briefly talk about the NBA games last night. Bear with me, because the NBA playoffs have gotten pretty good. But something happened in one of the NBA games last night that is not good for the NBA. And it kind of, you know, there's been multiple games where it's been for a certain group, and I would say older basketball fans that remember when five players on offense participated on offense, when, you know, there were fewer three-point shots taken. But let me just quickly mention the last game of last night, the Nuggets over the Thunder. You do have a situation still in the NBA, and we'll see if this holds up, where experience trumps youth athleticism, length, fresher bodies, pretty much most of the time in the NBA. You know, the real talented teams that you see coming and you think are ready to win a championship now, Houston was just ridiculously talented, athletic, long, you know, depth. And it looked like Golden State was dead to right heading into Game 7. But Steph Curry, Draymond Green, Jimmy Butler, experience over youth. And experience really trumping perhaps a better talented team, a more talented team. Last night, Game 1, best team in the NBA during the regular season, Oklahoma City, swept their first-round opponent, waiting for Denver, who knocked off the Clippers in Game 7, which I'll just add real quickly. James Harden is one of the worst playoff performers in big playoff games in the history of the game. I wrote down some of these things. James Harden, 42 playoff games in his career with as many turnovers as made field goals. He only made two field goals in Game 7 the other night. 35 playoff games with under four field goals made. 55 playoff games with under five field goals made. I've never seen somebody be as much of a slow learner or just be completely disinterested in adapting a regular season game that is Hall of Fame to a playoff-style game, which is pedestrian, which is his. He's horrendous to watch in the playoffs. Horrendous. He'll make a lot of shots. He'll make a lot of plays. He is painful to watch. He just does not understand the difference between regular season basketball and playoff basketball. I mean, he was a complete train wreck in Game 7. They had no chance with him on the floor. They would have been better had he been hurt and not played. But anyway, last night, the Nuggets beat the Thunder. This game was never in doubt throughout. Like, the Thunder had double-digit leads for much of the game. And then the Nuggets would make a run and get it down to 7, get it down to 5, and then it would go right back to double digits. They had an 11-point lead with 3 minutes, just over 3 minutes to go. But Jokic, Jamal Murray, Aaron Gordon, champions. They've been there. They've done it. Nikola Jokic had 42 points, 22 rebounds, 6 assists, 2 block shots, and a steal. I mean, the dude is just all-world, all-time great. And he got them back into the game with Jamal Murray and with a lot of players that were making players. By the way, you know who's playing great in the postseason? Who saw this coming? I didn't. Russell Westbrook, at 36 years old, is playing the best basketball in the postseason he's played in forever. I would credit the high IQs of Nikola Jokic and players like Jamal Murray to what Russell Westbrook is doing right now. But they came back, and there was a strategy that Oklahoma City employed at the end of that game where they were fouling up 3. It's an okay strategy. You know, it's either you're going to give up the 3 or you're going to foul before they take the 3 when you're up 3 in the final, 17 or so seconds of the game. The problem is they were doing it in the backcourt instead of letting clock run off. Like, just not smart. It started with them up 117 to 114, and they fouled, Jokic. Then they fouled Aaron Gordon, and they were fouling too quickly instead of letting clock run off. Eventually, if you have that foul strategy up 3, you got to make sure that you feel like you're not going to miss a free throw. It's one thing to foul up 3 with, say, under 10, under 8 seconds to go. But to do it starting with 17 seconds to go and to do it quickly without letting clock run off means you're going to have to make a lot more free throws than just 2. Because they're going to foul you after they make both shots. And eventually, Chet Holmgren missed 2, up 1, with 9.1 seconds left. And the Nuggets came down, and Aaron Gordon, who had a buzzer-beating dunk in Game 4 against the Clippers, knocked down on a really good play by Westbrook to pass the ball, make the right play to pass it to Aaron Gordon. Gordon knocked down a 25-foot 3 with 2.8 seconds, with 1.8 seconds to go. And then Oklahoma City, with no timeouts, had to put up a 3-quarter court shot, and they lost the game. It was the definition of a game being stolen. That was their first lead since midway through the first quarter, and they trailed by double digits for much of the night. Experience over youth in the postseason. Also, I'd hang that on the coach a little bit. I don't mind the foul strategy. If that's what's worked for you, you can't foul people in the backcourt. You got to let them burn some clock. They're not shooting from the backcourt. You don't have to worry about catching them in the shooting motion. And then we go to the first game last night. Knicks-Celtics. The Celtics had a 20-point second-half lead. If you're just tuning into the NBA playoffs, a 20-point lead in an NBA game in the regular season is really nothing. In the playoffs, it should be something. But it's not if you're going to shoot 60 threes and only make 15 of them. That's what Boston did. They missed 10 in a row when they were up 20, and they allowed the Knicks back in the game. And this is the part where old man get off your lawn comes out a little bit, and a lot of people, sometimes yours truly as well, they missed a record 45 three-pointers in a playoff game that set the NBA record. Well, why, when they were missing all these shots, didn't they take it to the bucket? Well, because that's what they do. They're an ISO team. They get their best players, Tatum and Brown, into matchups that they like, and these dudes typically settle for threes or draw the defense and kick to somebody else who shoots a 3. They missed 45 three-pointers in a game. They shot 60. They had 97 total field goal attempts in the game. 60 of them were threes, and they shot 25% from behind the arc. What's really scary about this game is they missed 45 three-pointers and still almost won the game. They went to overtime and lost by three. So the question, and I'm listening to a lot of the recaps of this game early this morning, will Boston change their strategy? Will they drive the ball? Will they go into the post? Probably not, because shooters never think the next one isn't going in. They always believe the next one's going in. And if they missed 45 and only lost by three, there's no way they believe they'll ever miss 45 again, that they'll ever shoot 25% again. By the way, the Knicks are a heavy ISO team, too. And Brunson takes some terrible shots. He just made his last night. Big ones. The Knicks steal game one. I would not go putting a lot of my money on the Knicks to win this series. And I would not put a lot of money on the Celtics all of a sudden changing from who they are. This is who they are. They just shoot an S-load of threes. The NBA playoffs, there you go. They're fantastic. And sometimes they're troubling. And last night watching the Celtics just bomb three after three and miss them all was really interesting. All-time interesting in terms of that, the way that goes, especially for those that can't stand that kind of basketball. I mean, it was hard to watch. All right, when we come back, you'll hear Tariq El-Bashir. He was on with me over the weekend on my podcast previewing Canes Caps. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the team980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app. Game one tonight. Caps, by the way, of the eight teams remaining, have the longest odds to win the Stanley Cup. They are also an underdog in this series, despite having home ice advantage. Game one is tonight. John Walton, who will be on the call for Caps Radio on our sister station, 106.7 The Fan, he'll join us at 12:30 today. Tariq El-Bashir joined me on my podcast over the weekend to preview the series. Tariq, of course, with Monumental Sports, but also does a really good job on ice for the Turner games, TBS, TNT, etc. I started off by just going back to the Montreal series and asking Tariq why they won and why they won in five games.
You know, Kevin, I feel like the series, and I think the players and even Coach Carberry would tell you, was probably a little closer than a five-game series. Game one could have gone either way. The overtime winner by Alex Ovechkin, that game had almost slipped away from Washington. Some of the other ones were kind of dicey and could have gone either way in the third period. But I think in the end, the deeper, more experienced team prevailed. The right team won the series. I feel like the great equalizer was twofold. When the Capitals were at home and Spencer Carberry could get his matchup, the matchup that he wanted. He wanted the Pierre-Luc Dubois line out against the Nick Suzuki line. They did a really good job of neutralizing what was one of the best offensive lines of the entire regular season. That Cole Caulfield, Nick Suzuki, Juraj Slafkovský line was dangerous. Yeah. And from the Four Nations tournament on to the end of the regular season, it actually was the best. They were a plus 15. Scoring 24 goals, I believe. But when they were at home, when Washington was at home, Carberry was able to manipulate the lineup and did a really, really nice job with that. And Dubois did a really nice job keeping those guys in check. Jacob Chychrun and John Carlson also deserve a lot of credit in that matchup. They were out there deployed quite a bit against the Suzuki line. Number two, when your goaltender is playing the way he is, and I'm talking about Logan Thompson here. I know there was an injury scare there, and Charlie Lindgren had to come in for a little bit. But when your goaltender is playing the way Thompson is, you can do great things. You and I have talked about this so many times in the past. Goaltenders just play such a big role, particularly this time of year. And right now, Thompson is arguably the best goalie in the tournament in terms of overall body of work this season, but how he's playing right now.
Look, you know this, and I've said this to you many times before. Tariq's line, I'm sure to many others, but including me many years ago, hockey at this point in the year shouldn't be called hockey. It should be called goalie. But is he really right now, with the way he's playing, the best goaltender in, remaining in the postseason?
You know, I mean, statistically, he's probably in the top three. You know, but I would say in terms of, and it's harder to measure this, in terms of making the timely saves, the saves that keep a game from getting tied, or you know, allow your team to stay ahead, he's making those stops, and he's making the really difficult stops. But more importantly, he's doing it when his team needs it the most. And you know, he's playing the way, Kevin, that he looked in December and January when he was, you know, in the conversation with Connor Hellebuck for the Vezina Trophy. And again, when you're the Capitals and you've got good offense, you got a very good defense that's played together, you know, all season long. You know, Marty Ferravari is out for the playoffs. That's a big loss. But for the most part, it's the same guys. You're playing Carberry system. You've got great coaching. But when you have that X factor in goaltending, playing at the level that Thompson is, watch out. You know, it's way too early to talk about, you know, how far this team could go. But if I'm the rest of the league, I'm looking at how the Capitals got by Montreal, and I'm going, if Logan plays the way he did against Montreal, against Carolina, the Capitals are going to be a problem. They could be playing a long time this spring.
What is it about LT? Whenever somebody's first name begins with an L and the last name begins with a T, it's always LT. I mean, the all-time LT is Lawrence Taylor, but LaDainian Tomlinson was LT, and Logan Thompson is LT. So I wanted to ask you about Dylan Strome, who's got 7 points, and I think he's second in the postseason right now, and the rest of the guys have played six games.
Nine points, seven assists, two goals.
Yeah. Sorry, that's what I meant. Just compare him to Nicklas Backstrom in Backstrom's heyday.
Yeah, different players. You know, I would say there are similarities, and the similarity that really stands out to me, Kevin, between Backstrom and Strome is both players play with the type of poise that they are able to slow down the game around them. Neither one of them are burners. Like, they're not fast. They're not going to overpower you. Their shot is not like so elite that, you know, he's just going to rip the puck past you the way like an Alex Ovechkin will. But he makes plays and creates space for himself by slowing the game down. And now that I've mentioned this, Kevin, you're going to notice this. When he gets the puck and he's in a tight window, he's in a tight space, he's able to twist and turn and use his body and use his sense of timing to just kind of elude defenders and just open up that eighth of a second, that fifth of, you know, half of a second even, that allows him to gain the space to operate and make a quick pass to a teammate. Backstrom was the maestro on the wall. I mean, he could do that better than just about anyone. I'm not going to say that Strome is in that category yet, but at his age, he's still getting better, and he's getting a lot better every year. I mean, the Capitals, you want to talk about a find. I mean, they signed him off the scrap heap from Chicago. I don't know what Chicago was thinking letting Dylan Strome walk a few years ago, but he's a legit number one center. And right now, his confidence is as high as I have seen it. You can see it when he's got the puck on his stick. His head's up, and he's reading the play, and he knows he's going to dangle it like he's got the puck on string, and he's going to make the right play, and he did repeatedly in that Montreal series. I mean, again, I don't know where things are going to go here, but he's a front runner right now for the best player on the Capitals. I mean, I know I just talked about LT, but, like, if this team goes a long way, like, he could be the playoff MVP based on the first series.
Yeah, I mean, I asked you because I had no clue, but, you know, I was reading about how great he's been this year, and he had 82 points this year, 53 assists, 29 goals in the regular season. And I just pulled up Backstrom's career before I reached out to you. He only had 3 seasons in his entire career that were better, you know, points total-wise than Strome's season this year. So I was just curious if there was a comparison. So anyway, before we get to Monday and the next series, Tommy and I were talking about this on the show yesterday. Tom Lavero and I were talking about just getting through this first round against Montreal was a bit of a psychological hurdle. Maybe not for every player on the team, and maybe not even the coach, because he hasn't been around here for everything that, you know, fans and some of the players and certainly the owner have experienced, you know, over the years of not advancing past the round you're supposed to advance past. And it had been 7 years since they had won a series. My question to you is, now that they've won a series, is the pressure off heading into the Carolina series? Or do you feel like, to sort of make the most out of this season and for people to steer, you know, to keep people away from being critical of the playoff result, they have to win another series? Because they're actually an underdog in the next series.
Which is also crazy to me. I noticed that this morning. I do not understand how they are an underdog to a team they finished double digits in terms of points
yeah.
standings points ahead of in the regular season. But, you know, Vegas feels very strongly about Carolina. And not to go off on a little bit of a tangent here, but, I mean, if you look at, to me, statistically, the three best teams in the playoffs right now, you know, I think Carolina and Washington are in that top three. So, yeah, I don't really understand, you know, you look comparing Washington and Carolina, the numbers, goals for, goals against, power play, penalty, it's all very similar. But anyway, in terms of pressure, I think the pressure's on these guys. I don't think they feel like they're playing with house money. I think they know that they won the Eastern Conference and for long stretches were in the mix for the President's Trophy because they've caught lightning in a bottle. You don't have many years like this. I mean, the Capitals have had some really, really good years where they, you know, won President's Trophies and flamed out in the playoffs.
Right.
And I think they will always live with some of that regret. I think, especially the old heads, the guys like Ovi and Carlson and Wilson, like, they're looking around the room going, boys, this doesn't happen every year. Like, we got an invitation to the dance, and now we're on to the second round. Like, let's not blow this because we have no idea what's going to be around the corner, what could happen next year. Like, we got to maximize this. Their chemistry is off the charts. Carberry is definitely a big, big X factor in terms of just how well he manages his players and how well he manages matchups and just really a good X's and O's coach and just knows how to communicate and say the right things. And, you know, Ovi, 39.5 years old, just had an incredible season. At some point, Father Time is coming for him, you know? Like, if I'm the Capitals, I'm looking at this as the best opportunity to make history, to solidify legacies since 2018.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. And by the way, what a memorable season it would be if they just advanced, you know, another round or two in combination with, you know, the chasing down of Gretzky and the passing of Gretzky. So you've talked a little bit about it in that last answer, but just what are the keys to beating Carolina? It sounds like you think the Caps are a better team. So what do they need to do to win this next round best of seven?
Well, they don't have a whole lot of control over how the goaltender plays, but again, if LT is the best player on the ice for long stretches, that is going to really, really matter. I think they do have the edge in goal. Carolina is an interesting team. A lot like the Capitals, they don't have star players. They don't have, like, a big headliner, oh my God, all-star, five-time all-star. Sebastian Aho, nice player, really good player. But like, you don't think of him as, like, a first-team, you know, all-NHL-type player. They have a lot of depth. They like to play the game very, very fast. They make life hard on the goaltender by funneling everything to the net. You will notice, Kevin, they shoot from anywhere and everywhere at all times. They like to work the goaltender and then hunt for those second-chance opportunities and then bury them when they do find them. So I would say, goaltending, if LT can play the way that he has, That, again, is a big X factor, always is this time of year. I would say for the Capitals, it's going to be boxing out in front of their own net. There's no way to suppress shots, really, against Carolina. They are going to throw everything and the kitchen sink at you. The key is going to be LT making the first save, putting the puck into a safe area, and then the defenseman and even the center, whoever is in that defensive coverage area, either clearing the puck, making a quick decision to get it back going the other direction, but just not allowing it to lie around and create those second chance rebound opportunities, because Carolina is the best team in the league at winning those battles 6 feet in front of the net. So that's another one. And the Capitals struggled for long stretches getting out of their own end against Montreal, and that really limited how much time they were able to spend in the offensive end with their better players. I think that's going to be a challenge for them, is going to be breaking the puck out against Carolina's heavy forecheck, but they've got to figure it out. They sort of figured it out towards the end of that Montreal series, but I'd like to see them have good control over that from the start. Clean breakouts, quick ups, getting the puck going north, and not spending too much time in your own end. When the Capitals got in trouble against Montreal, it was because the D-man went to retrieve a puck, passed it up to the winger, it didn't get out. It came back in, and Montreal was able to sustain its offensive zone pressure and would eventually break down the Capitals and get a goal.
All right, two more. Go ahead. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, I was saying for the Capitals to succeed, they're going to have to get that puck out of their own end and going up in the other direction as quickly and as efficiently as possible.
All right, last two. First, give me a player that you think, is sort of an X factor in this series for the Caps.
I'm going to go with Anthony Beauvillier. Relative newcomer to the team, obviously acquired at the deadline. He is tailor-made for these types of moments. I thought he was very good in the Montreal series.
Game one, he had a huge goal.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
He had a huge goal, and he also had an assist to OV on the overtime winner.
Right.
Yeah. He is a dog on a bone. He is dogged and determined and plays on his toes over his skates. Like he invites contact. He dishes out contact. He's not a very big man, but he is tailor-made for the playoffs. He's had some great playoff runs with other teams in the past. 2 years in a row for the Islanders, he was one of their best players in the postseason. For me, he's the X factor. I thought he got to his game during stretches in Montreal. I think he's going to be better against Carolina.
All right, prediction.
Capitals in seven. And here's what I think is going to happen. I think everyone is going to hold serve at home, and I think it's going to come down to that last game in Washington. And that's what you play the entire year for, right, is to have home ice advantage, where Carberry is one of the best in terms of manipulating lineups and kind of anticipating what the other coach is trying to do and then counteracting it. Having home ice is going to be massive for the Capitals. They're going to win it in seven at home in D.C. and move on to play either Florida or Toronto in the conference final.
Thanks for doing this, Tark. As always, hopefully we are talking before an Eastern Conference final series in a week or so. Appreciate it. Hope you're well.
Kevin, give me a call anytime.
Tark El-Bashir, everybody. Always good to have Tark on. John Walton will join us at 12:30 today to preview Game 1 and preview the series against Carolina as well. When we come back, a not-surprising cut of a future Hall of Famer. That's next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
All right, last night, the Washington Nationals were rained out. They will re-rack today and take on the Cleveland Guardians twice in a doubleheader right here on the Team 980. Pregame starts with Charlie and Dave, starts at 3:05. Two thrilling NBA finishes last night. The Knicks rallied from a 20-point deficit to beat the Boston Celtics in overtime, 108-105, and the Nuggets fight back to steal a win off Oklahoma City. Jokic put up 42 points and 22 rebounds. Toronto Maple Leafs goaltender Anthony Stolarz exited the game last night midway through the second period and was sent to the hospital with concussion-like symptoms after taking a puck to the mask and an elbow to the head. He has since been released. The Maple Leafs win last night 5-4. The Washington Capitals will finally take on the Carolina Hurricanes after nearly a week off. Pregame at 6:45 on 1067 The Fan. Logan Thompson expected to get the start. This update is sponsored by the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open the app, type in the Team 980, and hit subscribe. Kevin Sheehan is live from 10 to 1 and Craig Hoffman from 4 to 7. Don't forget to like the stream and turn on notifications to stay up to date on all things DC sports. And that's what's trending.
John Orand, our favorite sports business reporter and columnist, will jump on with us at 11. We'll talk NFL draft. We'll talk NFL schedule, which comes out a week from tomorrow. But draft here in D.C. Will be part of the topic. Yesterday, the Ravens did something that I think was expected. They released Justin Tucker after 13 years in Baltimore, after a certainly by the numbers Hall of Fame worthy career, although it's tough to get in as a kicker. But they released him after a 13 season run in Baltimore. And look, his career's in jeopardy as well, in part because he hasn't kicked well recently. You know, before we get to the real reason he was released yesterday at just 35 years old, he's coming off easily the worst year of his career from a field goal percentage standpoint. He over 90% as a kicker going into the 2024 season, all-time best field goal percentage in NFL history. He still has that at 89.1%, but he was 22 of 30 last year, 73.3%, which was the lowest by far of his NFL career. He missed five field goals over 50 yards away. This is the holder of the longest field goal in NFL history at 66 yards, and a player who made 67 consecutive kicks, an NFL record, in the fourth quarter or in overtime. Quite amazing. 65, excuse me. It ended when he missed a 67-yard field goal that came up just short in November of 2022 against Jacksonville. But Tucker made 65 consecutive field goal attempts in fourth quarters or overtimes, and overtimes, longest such streak in NFL history. But the issue with Justin Tucker is that there are 16 massage therapists in the Baltimore area that have accused him of sexually inappropriate behavior during bodywork sessions. The allegations, which Tucker has denied, have not led to anything other than allegations. But these were allegations from not one or two massage therapists, but from 16. Ravens GM Eric DaCosta said yesterday about Tucker's release, it was a football decision. A team citing character issues as a reason for the player's release puts itself at risk, actually, of a grievance if the player ends up being cleared of any wrongdoing. You know why he is being released. One off season would not have caused the release of Justin Tucker. Now, did he have a season in 23 or 22 that rivaled some of the seasons where he was 90% plus? He was 94.6% on field goal percentages back in 21. He was 89.7 in 2020, 96.6 in 2019. So the performance had fallen off a bit. And they had, you know, some issues with Justin Tucker. It looked like he had the yips a little bit, especially on field goals of 50 or longer, which used to be no-brainers. But there's no doubt that the concern over these allegations are a part of it as well. What's interesting is just to consider how that, and character is part of the judgment for Hall of Fame, how that will end up hurting his Hall of Fame case. He does have a Hall of Fame case. There are only two kickers in the Hall of Fame, Morton Anderson and Jan Stenerud. Most people believe that Adam Vinatieri will eventually be in the Hall of Fame. Justin Tucker, easily with the best field goal percentage makes of all time. And again, that dropped this year a little bit from what it was, an overall overwhelming advantage on field goal percentage makes. You've got the 65 consecutive in the fourth quarter or overtime. You've got the longest field goal in NFL history. Justin Tucker has made 7 Pro Bowls, and he's been named to the All-Pro first team 5 times. That's much more than Stinnerud or Morton Anderson in terms of the All-Pro teams. And, by the way, 2 more than Adam Vinatieri and 4 more Pro Bowls than Adam Vinatieri. So he does have an on-the-field case for being a Hall of Fame player. And look, time will tell on these allegations and whether or not they will hurt. And he's at least 5 years away from being eligible anyway. And sometimes those other things can diminish just a tad. But man, you talk about a change in narrative on a player. A guy who is, you know, an operatic singer and piano player and the whole thing. And all that he's done in the community after all these years. And the reputation that he had has come tumbling down, crashing down. They drafted a kicker. They drafted a kicker by the name of Tyler Loop this year out of Arizona, so they have their replacement in-house. When we come back, John Oran from Puck News will join us. We'll talk about the impacts of the 2027 draft on Washington, D.C., and we are a week away from the NFL schedule unveiling. We'll get John's thoughts on what may happen there as well. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com. We are also free and live on the Odyssey app, and you can watch us now as we are streamed on the Team 980's YouTube page. Just hit the subscribe button and the like button for us.